For the first time, U.S. subscribers can stream MLB Network 24/7, including select out-of-market games.
Swing and a drive. It's deep. It's gone. Yes!
Stream minor league affiliates.
Home run number one.
Portrait pick number one.
Plus, get MLB Big Inning and live audio for all 30 teams.
Baseball can't get better than this.
Experience the game like never before with MLB Network and At-Bat, your all-in-one baseball destination. Only $6.99 per month. Visit MLB.com/At-Bat for details. Blackout and other restrictions apply. MLB trademarks used with permission.
Welcome to episode number 16. You just keep on rolling them along. This is the Howard Eskin podcast, available on iTunes. Subscribe. It's for free, and you'll be notified, as you are every week, the people that have subscribed to when I post my new podcast. Now, the most important player on the Eagles is who? I think everybody knows that question. The most important player on the Eagles, or on any team for that matter, is really the quarterback, Carson Wentz. Everybody wants to know about Carson Wentz, and everybody wants to hear how he's doing, his progress, what's moving forward, all kinds of things, and some interesting things that I've learned and you will learn about Carson Wentz because I talked to the quarterback coach of the Philadelphia Eagles, who is the guy, and he'll explain it, who's the guy that's really responsible for the day-to-day things of Carson Wentz. And I'll let the quarterback coach, John DeFilippo, explain the roles that everybody has when it comes to Carson Wentz. All right, John, to explain to the fans, all right, the head coach was a quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
The offensive coordinator was a quarterback. You were a quarterback and the quarterback coach. What are your roles when it comes to Carson Wentz?
Our head coach, Coach Peterson, is in charge of the welfare of our team. Coach Reich's in charge of the welfare of our offense, and both of those include the quarterback position. And then my job literally is the day-to-day welfare of specifically of the quarterback. So obviously everyone has a hand in coaching Carson. I mean, Coach Peterson has a hand in coaching everybody. Coach Reich has a hand in coaching everyone on offense, and on my role is specifically to deal with the quarterbacks on a day-to-day basis to make sure that they're getting better.
So you really are more directly involved as the quarterback coach, and maybe that's why you have that title, with your quarterback, Carson Wentz, right?
Well, he and I spend a lot of time together.
Right.
I'll say that.
Right.
Yeah, he and I spend a lot of time together.
Okay, so now you see Carson Wentz from last year, and you see him this year. What has he improved on, and what does he still need to do to move forward?
Well, the first thing I think when non-physical improvement is overall confidence in the offense. I think you just see him. You see very, very few eye violations, what we call them, where his eyes are in the wrong spot. You don't see him get fooled as much in terms of the coverage by the defense as you saw last year at times, where it surprises him a little bit. From a physical standpoint, I think you see a guy that has a lot tighter, compact release. I think you see a guy that holds the ball higher. I think you see a guy that is willing to escape the pocket, take off and go, and pump fake and get down. So I think the combination of those things, I think I just see overall improvement. And I think his feet have settled down in the pocket as well.
How do you coach eye violation?
Well, you just...
you tell him it's a good play or a bad play,
sure.
Obviously.
Well, a lot of times eye violations come during the game. Say... We're throwing a concept that we call a single high, two high read, okay, where we're working one side of the field. If there's one safety in the middle of the field, we're working another side of the other side of the field if there's two safeties in the field. Where if his eyes are in the wrong spot, he doesn't see the rotation of the safeties, and his eyes are over at the two high side, that's what we call an eye violation. So he's got to make sure his eyes get to the single safety side.
All right. Franchise quarterback is a term that everybody likes to use. I don't know how you define that other than say, well, this guy's a really good quarterback.
Yeah.
How can you tell that Carson's going to be a really good quarterback?
I think, number one...
I'm assuming that's what you think.
I do think that,
okay.
100%. Number one, very rarely, if ever, do you have a so-called franchise quarterback that is not a high-character person. I mean, think of all the franchise quarterbacks in this
yep.
league. They're high-character people. Carson Wentz is a high-character person, number one. Number two... All the franchise quarterbacks in the National Football League love and are obsessed with football. They love the grind. They love the from Monday to Saturday part of the game, and don't just go out there and freelance it on Sunday. Carson loves the grind of the week and getting ready for an opponent. That's number two. Number three, are the physical traits. Being able to drive the ball to the perimeter, 6'5", 240 pounds. Being able to throw off balance. Being able to throw on the run. So I think those three things I've mentioned, those three categories that I mentioned, have the makings to for Carson to have a very, very successful career here in Philadelphia.
Would you say that the quarterback position in the NFL is the hardest to either evaluate or develop, or is it one of the top two or three?
I think it's hard. I think it's gotten easier as I've done it a lot more. You kind of know what to look for. You know, the makeup of a person, and when you're evaluating these guys, is just so important, and the character, and whether they love football or not, and what type of leader are they? They don't have to be a rah-rah guy, but they have to have some sort of leadership ability. By example, by if they are a rah-rah guy, but they, by, you know, doing it right on the field, they have to have some form of leadership.
Now, when you leadership a lot of times happens in the huddle, and you hear that from the players. Do you talk to your other players and say, how did he respond to this, and how is he in the huddle? I mean, that's obviously, is that a part of the leadership?
That is part of the leadership, and part of the leadership is short-term memory. Short-term memory, when you come off and have a three and out, is getting those guys, hey guys, let's get going, or 2-3 and outs, or an interception, or something bad happens, a fumble, is getting those guys going and motivated and to keep the offense going. So short-term memory is a huge, huge sign of leadership. But there's not a lot of time, obviously, for a ton of talking in the huddle because, you know, the play clock's so fast and you're trying to get the next playoff. So I think a lot of that stuff happens on the sidelines between series.
You know, the thing that I notice about Carson is body language. Mm-hmm. I mean, I see guys that make a bad play and it's a poor throw or it's an interception. The body language is awful. Carson's doesn't seem to be that way. How important is that? And tell me if I'm right. And how important that is that for the success, the long-term success of a quarterback?
First off, you're 100% right. 1,001% right, okay? Second of all, we have body language fines in our room.
Really?
We call each other out for body language. And those guys, if they see me on the tape, they call me out for body language. If they see me on tape. So we call each other out for body language all the time. Okay, so it's something that's talked about. It's something that's coached. It's something that's brought up all the time. You are always being watched as the quarterback. Always. We always bring that up. And we call each other out for body language.
No, and what's bad body language?
Sulking, taking your chin strap and pulling it.
Yeah.
Chasing after an interception if you throw an interception and putting your head down. Throwing a ball down after a sack.
Let me give you an example. A receiver may run the wrong route, and the quarterback shouldn't talk about it on the field. He should talk to the receiver on the sideline. Am I correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So when some quarterbacks point and they say, you know, kind of, well, you were supposed to go that way. You didn't make the right read. Is that a violation?
That would be a body language violation. Correct. Yes.
And that doesn't seem. I've never seen that with Carson. I may be wrong. Have you ever seen that?
Not yet. But I'll tell you what. And it better not happen. So, believe me. So we are big believers in positive body language.
You know, people cried, and I don't want to take away what Jordan Matthews meant to this team, mm-hmm. but there was so much. Oh, what's Carson Wentz going to do? Jordan Matthews, and he was his go-to guy. How much better is Carson Wentz at adapt? And it was a good friend of his at
sure.
adapting to, hey, this is what it is, and adapting to change and moving forward.
I think, you know, obviously after the initial shock of that, and, you know, losing a good buddy and losing a good teammate, I think after the initial shock, you know, at the end of the day, you got to move forward. And I think Carson has that positive outlook on with our football team and our receivers. That I think he's able to move on fairly quickly. And obviously, you know, we're pleased with the competition in our receiver room right now. I mean, we've tremendously upgraded in that room. And then you add Zach Ertz, Trey Burton, and, you know, obviously, you know, Selleck's having a great camp. And you know, our backs out of the backfield. I think there's going to be plenty of weapons offensively
for
us.
Is the term go-to receiver overemphasized by the media? Because usually the quarterback wants to find a guy that's open. Now, there may be players that can get open
sure.
a little bit easier, I would assume. Is go-to guy kind of a misconception of, oh, this is his favorite guy, or does he really have favorites?
No, you don't. As a quarterback, you know, coach a lot of these guys, you really – obviously certain plays are designed for certain guys, and as a coach, we try to put our receivers in the best situation they can to run the best routes that they run well. So from a formation or play design standpoint – somebody's the first progression on every play.
Right, obviously.
Right? So, okay. But at the same time, if that's not open, you throw to spots. You throw to color. Like, you don't reset your feet and saying, oh, I'm throwing to wide receiver so-and-so, or I reset my feet, I'm throwing it to running back so-and-so. That doesn't even go through your brain. You're trying to get the ball out of your hand on time and accurately. And so, really, outside of the first progression or the play design, that's kind of, like I think you said, a little bit overrated.
Okay, so you're in the tape room, and you obviously say, hey, Carson, you should have gone to the second or third progression, or you should have gone to your first read. Does that happen a lot with him, or how much less does it happen now?
A lot less now. You know, a lot less now. And what we talk about now with him more than anything is really the next step, is step up in football conversation. Like for example, if we're running an outbreaking route, and say to the slot, and a nickel is an outside leverage, and he's our first progression, hey, Carson, you may want to get your eyes back to number two with the leverage of that a little bit quicker. You know, so we try to, now we're talking about accelerating our vision back to number two and number three a little bit more than just hanging on number one. So last year we were just in install mode all the time, trying to learn the offense. Now we're having time to really able to sit down and say, and talk and leverage of defenders, different types of coverages and those things. And obviously that helps the quarterback grow.
To give the people some kind of feel for what it takes, explain the amount of seconds he has to go from one, two to three.
Not long. And obviously, depending on the play design and the protection, it's a little, you know, it's obviously you have quick game and you have play action game and those things. You know, depends how many guys you have in protection. You want that ball out of your hand in a perfect world. If you're dropping back to throw, 1.8, 1.9, 2 seconds at the, you know. Whew.
There's not much time.
No.
Not much time at all. All right. You need a running game, obviously, to help him out.
Sure.
And you need the line to protect to help him out. It didn't seem to be that good for maybe different reasons, not game planning, whatever. How much does the quarterback, in this case Carson Wentz, need to have a running game established? Or can you set up the run with the pass as you did with your tempo offense?
Sure. I think, obviously, a running game helps out any quarterback. You want to be as balanced as you can.
But can you set up the run with the pass? Or is that dangerous? Is that a dangerous road to go down?
You can, and it just depends on who you're playing. I mean, there's some weeks that you're going to do that. And because, you know, for example, the last place I was at, you know, is the coordinator. We knew we were going to have a hard time running the football against a certain opponent, and we went in thinking, hey, we're going to throw the ball 45, 50 times this game. So I'm not saying that's what we're going to do. I mean, we were the fifth most efficient run team in the NFL last year, and the majority of those guys are back. So we expect to run the football this year. And I think, obviously, the more efficient we run the football, the better our offense will run, because we're really good in the play-action world. And, you know, we got some guys now that we can protect it up and take some shots down the field. So I think anytime you have a positive run game, I think it really helps the QB.
Okay, so it's no secret the receivers are better this year.
Mm-hmm.
Did that hurt Carson's development last year because you didn't have as many guys? I mean, he was obviously limited with the receivers you had. How much did that hurt his development?
You know, been asked this question a lot. I'm not one of those guys that's going to say, hey, it was on the receivers all the time. I don't believe in that. I don't believe in pointing fingers. I really don't. Everyone had a hand in being 7-9 last year. I mean, every position did. And I'm only obviously speaking for the quarterbacks, but I had a hand in it. They had a hand in it. We all had a hand in it. And so we're all looking to improve every day, and hopefully we are.
You know, people, they look at the number of attempts he had last year. Is that really a problem if you need him to win the game?
No, it's not.
When you're down by 14, don't you have to pass the ball?
Absolutely. And that's somebody, I got to answer that question earlier. That's why, to me, the whole thing of when somebody ever asks you what's your run-to-pass ratio, obviously in a perfect world, if you would love it to be 50-50, but at the end of the day, you got to do what you got to do to win the game. I've been involved in games where we've thrown it 12 times and won the game, and been involved in games where we've thrown it 60 times and won the game. You do what you have to do to win the game.
Okay.
And so week by week, it's going to change.
Well, and the other thing is, if you're up by 14 in the fourth quarter, you're going to get – you may have done that with maybe 65% or 60% passing, and now you're going to run the ball at the end, and you have three kneel downs at the end.
Right.
Doesn't that – people kind of lose the concept and the sight of that?
Yeah. At the end of the day, you do what you got to do to win the game.
And that's really what it comes down to. Now, If you, in a perfect world, what do you want to see Carson get better with right now? In a perfect world.
Situational football. I think we need, that's our next step, is situational football. Knowing when to, when I lose my feet on first down, to check the ball down. Red zone efficiency. Third down efficiency. Situational football is always a work in progress to master, but I think you can really, really get better at it, and I think that's what we're really harping with Carson this year to get better at.
Okay, so what do you do in the red zone to help get better? The red zone, your red zone offense obviously wasn't terrific.
No, I'm not overstating the situation. We weren't where we want to be in the red zone. We have a touchdown check down mentality in the red zone, and that's our mindset in the, on offense and in the quarterback room is we want to throw the ball in the end zone, but at the same time, if it's not there, we're going to get a completion and advance the football. So, because there's nothing worse than going obviously backwards in the red zone. So that's our mantra is touchdown, check down, and get a completion and, you know, put it in our playmakers' hands.
John, you know this area. You know it's Philadelphia. Yep. You know the quarterback is the guy that everybody looks at. Do you realize what your responsibility is?
You know.
I mean, you think absolutely. About that. Think about that. Oh, Carson Wentz didn't do this. Well, John DeFilippo maybe can help him a little bit better. I'm not saying you haven't. Sure. Do you realize how much responsibility you have?
I love it. If you don't, you're in the wrong profession. If you don't enjoy the grind, if you don't enjoy the pressure, if you don't enjoy the feeling of a win a Sunday afternoon, then you're in the wrong profession. Then get out. I always tell everyone, they're like, man, you work a lot of hours. I'm like, I said I'm the quarterback coach of the Philadelphia Eagles.
Yeah.
I said this is a dream come true for me.
So
yeah, I mean it's been awesome.
So if Carson does well, you're the guy that nobody says a word about. If Carson does poorly, first they blame the head coach, then they blame the offensive coordinator, but you're still in that mix. You know what happens in this town, right?
Absolutely. And you know what? When he plays great this year, I will be happy as a clam to be in the background.
Well, it makes you look good too.
Hey.
Obviously, your career, you want to improve just like everybody tries to get better. So he can make you a star, right? Do you realize that?
I'll tell you, like I said earlier, my goal this
year. And it's
year,
the player who has to play.
Sure.
Yeah.
But you can help him prepare. There's no doubt about it. My goal this year is to be the best quarterback coach in the National Football League.
Okay. Well, we'll judge you at the end of the year.
Let's do it. Hey, I'll take it on.
You've done a good job so far. He's moved forward. Yeah. I think he's better than Dak Prescott with the weapons that he had last year. If he has that line, that running game, I think he's Dak Prescott without a question. You kind of feel the same way?
Well, I'll tell you this. There was one thing in my career I never do. I never compare players because each player's situation is very, very different.
And I like that too, because you can't say, well, this guy looks like Peyton Manning or this guy looks like Tom Brady. You can't do that.
Everyone's situation is different. So I kind of stay away from the player comparisons.
Well, I don't know who I'm going to compare. He would have. I'll tell you what. Here's what I'm going to do for you.
You can have that opinion.
Okay. Carson Wentz would have had as good, if not better, numbers if he had what Dak Prescott had last year. Would you be okay with me saying that?
Howard, you're the man. You can say whatever you want, buddy.
Thanks, John.
You can say whatever you want.
Thanks. Yeah. Well, I said it.
There you go.
Fines for body language. That's great. For bad body language, which I've always made a point of that, and I actually think that's pretty good because Eli Manning, and I know everybody gets caught up on, well, Sheli Manning won 2 Super Bowls. I don't care what he won. I can't stand his body language. That's a terrible thing. That was kind of interesting. But the fact that Carson Wentz is really, really moving forward is a good thing. And let me just make this clear. For those people, and it's always these Cowboys fans that get carried away, Dak Prescott is a nice quarterback. You know, someday, probably be. He had a good year last year, no question. A good quarterback. But if you flip roles, between Dak Prescott and Carson Wentz last year and put Carson Wentz on the Cowboys and Dak Prescott on the Eagles, Carson Wentz would have had better numbers than Dak Prescott with the Dallas Cowboys. They had everything. They had the offensive line. They had a running game. They had the wide receivers. And that's everything that Carson Wentz didn't have last year. Now,
quarterbacks have to go out and produce. Carson Wentz is a very, very bright guy. Physical skills, great learner, all those things that you need when you want a player to be a good quarterback. But you've got to go out there and do it. I think there's one thing that's really clear. Carson Wentz was the better of the two quarterback picks between Jared Goff and Carson Wentz. And the Eagles are so lucky. And I think they kind of had an inkling that Carson Wentz would have been there at two, but they're so lucky that the Rams took Jared Goff rather than Carson Wentz, because the Eagles would really be screwed if they had Jared Goff as their quarterback, and there wouldn't be as bright a future as there appears to be. Now you break down, and everybody wants to break down the Eagles. Well, I've already got the wide receivers picked, and I'm leaving one guy out, and the wide receivers, obviously Alshon Jeffrey, Torrey Smith, Nelson Aguilar in the slot. Marcus Johnson makes the team. He was on the practice squad last year. He makes the team. He has just impressed everybody all the time. He's the fourth wide receiver, and Mac Hollins will count as the fifth wide receiver, although he'll play mostly on special teams. Now, the thing that you got to understand, I think Bryce Traggs, now he didn't play the last game, and didn't play the game against Buffalo because he had a hamstring pull. He's right on the edge, but when you keep, because you're going to have numbers problems at tight end, because Trey Burton might be that extra tight end, because Brent Celek makes the team. Zach Ertz, so that's three right there. I know Mike Quick likes Billy Brown as a tight end. You can't keep them all, and I don't know that you can keep four, but that's maybe the reason that you cannot keep six wide receivers. But Bryce Traggs got to play somewhere, because I think he's really had a good camp, and it looks like he could be a not a great receiver, but a good receiver, a fourth or fifth receiver for a lot of football teams. Now you go to the running back, which is the concern that I really have. LeGarrette Blount had a lot of carries last year. That always affects a player the next year, but he's not a speed guy. He's a short yardage player. And for that, I think he's okay if the offensive line does their job. However, after that, it is wide open. Wendell Smallwood's been hurt too much in camp. Can he play? Yeah, he can play. So he's likely going to be, not likely, he will be on the team, assuming he's healthy. And then the guy that's kind of jumped out at you, Darren Sproles is going to be there, obviously. He said it's his last year. Who knows whether he'll play another year the way he can play, but he said it's his last year. And then you got the competition between Donnell Pumphrey and Corey Clement. And to me, it's clear right now who that player is. I'm taking the fourth running back, and I think you pretty much have to. I think it's, without question, in the way I've seen things, it's Corey Clement. Corey Clement, without question, is the other running back. Donnell Pumphrey, and I think he'll go to the practice squad. He has not done anything to impress anybody that another NFL team will pick him up. So at the running back, that's kind of defined. I think the way it stands right now, Donnell Pumphrey will not be on the team, but he will be on the practice squad. And Corey Clement, out of the clear blue, an undrafted free agent player, not drafted, will make the football team, which is obviously a dream for him since he grew up right across the river in New Jersey. All right, Ronald Darby will be one corner. Jalen Mills, people got to give him a little bit of respect, because I think Jalen Mills is better than people think he is. Now, he's not a star, but both those guys, and this is what Jim Schwartz likes. He likes corners that are not afraid to press cover, and those guys will press cover, and that helps in everything else. Derek Barnett has been really good in camp. It's obviously that he'll add to that pass rush. The pass rush clearly will be better. People forget about Tim Jernigan because he's not mentioned that much, but he really adds to the help that Fletcher Cox needs. And I think Fletcher Cox will clearly have a better year after the way he played last year. He's really got to have a better year than he did last year. So their defense will be better. How much better? You got to wait and see. We're not worried about the safeties with McLeod and Jenkins. So it's it's the nickel guys, and Ron Brooks has got to stay healthy, but he plays well at the nickel in the backfield there, in the defensive backfield. So the team, the one other weakness that I've seen with the team, now the running game I'm not impressed with so far. The special teams, what the hell has happened to the special teams? Forget about run backs. It's the yardage they give up on returns. And I know the coach, the special teams coach, Dave Phipp, is not happy. Obviously, he's not happy. That was a strength of the Eagles, and that has got to get better. But they're a better football team. There will always be questions on how good certain areas are, and I don't know that you can tell from training camp, and you can tell when players don't play that much in the game, and I think that's a problem moving forward. Bill Belichick, you know, the guy that nobody challenges, is scrimmaging with the teams he plays in the preseason every week, and he's not playing a lot of his starters. I think that's bad, that's weak. I don't know what the NFL can do, but they've got to stop that. If you're going to have preseason games and you're going to charge, you're going to let people in for free, that's one thing. But if you're going to charge for preseason games and you're going to find, and other coaches will probably start doing the same thing, the NFL's got to do something. I don't know what they can do. They can't tell coaches who to play and who not to play, but they can probably put a stop to the limit of scrimmages that teams can have with other teams. And with that being the case, then the coaches may have to play more of the starters in the games. And Bill Belichick has really ruined that. Has ruined that for the NFL, because he can do whatever he wants to do. So I'm not going to talk about the Phillies this week. We really just want to get the season over with. Just get it over with. I don't get carried away with what the players that they've brought up are doing. Rhys Hoskins, they always thought, can play. He'll be the first baseman next year. Tommy Joseph, I don't know what they're going to get for Tommy Joseph, but because you're not going to get a whole lot in a trade. Maybe you put something together and put him with a few players. But the players that I don't think should or will be here for the Phillies next season. Tommy Joseph, it's too bad. He's just okay. And Rhys Hoskins is a better player. I would trade Mikel Franco in a heartbeat. In a heartbeat, I would trade him. And I know there's some people that object, and I would trade Odubel Herrera. I don't care what he hits. I don't care what he does. I don't care about his cybermetrics in the outfield. I just don't think he's good for a baseball team, because he makes mistakes and it just sets a bad example for the other players. So that's it. That's all I'm talking about with the Phillies. Sixers, I'm still annoyed that they took a home game away from the fans, a good home game with the Boston Celtics, and playing in London. That's not good. And the back-to-backs that they have because of all those days off before and after the London game. Not that it makes any difference with this team this year, but you don't want to have them in future years. So we'll talk more, obviously, about the Sixers when it gets closer, when it gets to camp. We'll deal with that. But anyway, hopefully you enjoyed John DeFilippo talking about Carson Wentz, and he's the guy that's going to help. And I think John DeFilippo will be a head coach sometime very soon in the NFL. You mark this down. John DeFilippo will be a head coach in the NFL. He's one of the guys that was interviewed at the Combine this last year, and they don't interview that many guys. They just interview them to try so teams can get a perspective, but we'll see. But I think John DeFilippo will be a head coach sometime soon, very, very soon, in the NFL. All right, hope you enjoyed episode number 16 of the Howard Eskin podcast. I know you want to subscribe if you haven't already. We'll catch you again next week.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
It's a good thing baseballs already have stitches. Because the way these ball players are hitting them. Yeah. Yeah, they'd need stitches if they didn't already have them. So the next time you're watching a poor little baseball smacked off the wall in center, keep that little fella in your thoughts. It's hard to be a baseball right now. Baseball is something else. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.